This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
We are talking still with Scott Roeder of Evidence Room about the Alec Murdoch case and the extremes that people can go to that you otherwise think they couldn't, that they otherwise think they couldn't, probably never imagine going to. But in fact, it does and can happen. Number one, that someone who appears on the outside to have been a loving father, to have had a good relationship, no violence really in the family. Obviously, we've learned he's a very sleazy person who's done a lot of bad things financially to others. But again, that doesn't necessarily make someone a killer. And when it appeared dynamically to the outside that the family was all good and that Alec was all good, although we learned about his addiction problems and all of that, which I think are that's systemic of some other mental issue that's going on there. People don't understand that someone is capable of doing this sort of thing. That seems to be the biggest argument I'm always hearing is, yeah, but how could someone do that? I think until you're actually in that situation, and I don't think a lot of people realize how common it is that people are in these sort of situations where maybe it doesn't get pulled off to the level that we saw here in this case, whether he's the one who did it or not. But let's assume for a moment that he is. People can do these sort of things to their family and the rest of the time have been a calm, loving, or at least appearing to be to the outside, while the inside, they have these inner demons that are going on. I won't go into great detail, but there was a point in my life where I had someone who attempted this with me and people that I cared about. I wasn't in the shed with Papa and Megs, but it was something where someone very close made an attempt on someone of that sort of relationship and then at me, and the rest of the time they had never ever exhibited any sort of violence. Luckily the situation was contained and nothing happened that was tragic, but we were one step away from Dateline. And it was, I mean, it's scary and it's shocking that people can do this, but they're not, people are capable. This idea that, how would a father, people do this. They do it. It happens. It doesn't mean that they're sitting there plotting the murder of their wife and family the whole time. They're not. But sometimes if it's the perfect storm, if there's the right mental imbalance here or there, and you get drugs involved and you get just the right stress points that are triggering and they feel caught in the corner, this sort of behavior can happen. I think that then speaks to Family Annihilator, which again, that's something that is a whole other topic if we want to put a label on it, but people are very capable of doing this that otherwise would not be. It has to be that perfect storm, sure. But it happens. And I don't know why that's so difficult.
Well, I think that's going back to the testimony of the prosecutor cross-examining Mr. Murdoch on the stand. I think his goal should have been to take Murdoch down a path that would bring out a different aspect of his personality, to show the jury that he's capable, just from a demeanor standpoint, to have this burst of anger, right? Yeah. We haven't seen any anger from Mr. Murdoch on the stand. His sorrow seems to be sincere. Whether it's sincere because of after the fact doesn't reflect necessarily on his guilt or innocence. But the prosecutor failed, I think, in trying to demonstrate Murdoch has the demeanor to pull this off. And I think you're right. There's a cognitive dissonance that regular people don't want to believe that other people who seemingly are normal in some regards or in most regards could do this violence. I think that's where the prosecutor failed in bringing out some kind of personality flaw that showed anger. He never got him angry on the stand. Mm-hmm. And I think but that's one of the risks you take when you're prosecuting a witness and you don't have a good script. I don't think that they prepared his cross-examination to to draw out that personality defect.
And I thought it was interesting early on where Alec came out at the very beginning and said, I would never intentionally hurt my wife or my son, intentionally being the key word. And with people who do these sort of things that did not plot them out, but something triggers, something snaps, it's not even just anger. It's a state of delusion that people get into if they're going to carry these sort of things out if they're not pre-planned. And this doesn't seem to be very pre-planned at all, if it is in fact him. Yeah, intentionally, you wouldn't. Nobody really would for the most part, but it can happen, and it does happen. And I'm almost wondering if Alec did do this, or if part of him wonders, did I do this, but has no recollection of it? Like suddenly just something snapped, he went in this crazy phase, which would I think also explain the bizarre use of guns. Everybody's like, well, why would someone do this logically? Because you're looking at it from a logical perspective. If he's not logical in how he's thinking right now, he's probably just grabbing any gun that's around. And had he grabbed this one, and then he grabbed that one, and then all of a sudden snapping out of it, oh my God, they're dead. Why I came down here, I don't remember coming down here. I wouldn't be surprised if this was something that he carried out and doesn't have a memory of, but maybe does know in his heart, there's no one else who could have done this. But I would intentionally do this.
Tony, you know what that reminds me of?
What?
The plot of the movie Fargo with Mr. Gunderson, who hires these two, you know, outlaws who are kind of bumbling to kidnap his family so that he could get money from his father-in-law to pay off the money he stole from his car dealership.
Sure.
And what if something like that happened, where he's so behind on his payments to this drug dealer who is a $50,000 a week tab for these opioids, and he's like, okay, come on in and kidnap my, you know, through my law firm or something. You know, it just smacks of some kind of concocted scheme. Now, whether or not he pulled the trigger himself or he had somebody else pull the trigger, I'm not sure. I'm having a hard time believing that you could kill your wife and your son as a diversion for his financial crimes, which I believe is what the prosecution is going with right now.
Yeah,
it's a crazy case, Tony. It'd be real interesting to see how this thing comes down the pike.
At the end of the day, I don't know. I think a lot of us might be overthinking it. I don't know that there really is much motive here if he did do it. Everybody wants to have the reason. Sometimes people just do this shit, and they end up snapping out of it going, oh my God, why did I do it? It's not in anyone's interest to do this sort of thing, but it happens, and people will carry these things out, and then they have to face the consequences in the rest of their life for what they have done. But it doesn't always mean that they sat there and did this for financial gain or for to move this or to hide that. Sometimes it's just a triggering event. And when you realize your life is falling apart and everything is that perfect storm, people can sometimes do crazy shit just with all of those things crumbling down. That's where I look at this from my own perspective and my own experiences and go, there's a lot of similarities here of the psychology of someone in a breakdown situation doing extreme things. And sometimes they pull it off and sometimes they do not. And this is one where it got pulled off, if in fact he did do it. I don't see this where he hired a hitman or there were two people involved. I think you had a delusional on opioids and also someone who had a mental break, just losing their mind doing this and then had to figure out some way to cover it up because A, they really truly didn't want to do it, but they did. And they don't want to, you know, ruin more of their life that they've already ruined with the financial crimes. So I believe his sorrow and everything he's feeling for his family is real. But that also doesn't mean that he didn't do it.
No, I agree with you. I think there's a very good chance that he committed both of these crimes in a confused, drug-induced stupor. But I guess the question I'm asking myself, if I'm on the jury, you know, listen, I have two sons and a daughter.
Yeah.
And I don't know any, just as a person, as a human being, to take your own child's life, I mean, a wife, that's one thing, because husbands and wife, it's, you know, there's all, there could be a lot of emotion there. She could be leaving them, and those things happen all the time. But for a father to kill his son, to me is the most unimaginable thing you could ever think of. And if I'm on the jury, I need more than what the prosecution has given me at this time.
I can't conceive of ever being in a state where one could do this, but I can under, I can see where the storm can brew enough. I mean, this kid, yes, they're painting him on the stand as the saint. In real life, he was kind of a dick, and he abused his girlfriend. He was an asshole to people of the family that he, the girl that he killed on the boat. He's standing there laughing at the scene of the fucking crime. I mean, this was not a good person. And I'm not saying it's justified in killing your son by any means, but he was really a shitty kid. He's not this, oh, everybody loved Papa. Everybody didn't love Papa. A lot of people really thought he was a shitty human being. And he, by all accounts, he was a shitty human being. But the fact that, and in all of that, and all of the stress and all of the bullshit that his son ended up bringing into the court of Alec Murdaugh and all of his other stuff, I can just see this perfect storm of all this anxiety, all this frustration, all of that with the opioids, with everything else, that this made someone snap and do something they didn't want to do, would never do in the right mind. But I don't know. I just see it as it being a perfect storm.
Right. Yeah. And then the wife being killed could just be a reaction to, you know, catching him at the scene.
Exactly.
And that was an emotional kind of secondary kill. Now, I thought that it was interesting. There was testimony that when the Mercedes was picked up from impound, that the girl who picked it up, found underneath the driver's seat, her wedding ring.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that the evidence just keeps on coming, and we'll see how this turns out. But like I said, Tony, I feel, I think the state needs to come a little bit stronger, on their, cross-examination of these witnesses to draw out, more evidence, of that implicates him in murder. I mean, we can implicate him all day and being, you know, an asshole and, you know, apple tree with the kids. But there's no direct evidence, tying him to the murder. And that's a tough place to be if you're the prosecutor, on this case. And I think even if they do get a conviction, I think that the lawyers for the defense are going to have, a lot of different grounds to appeal. And then just one final thing on the prosecution side, they pulled a little bit of what I think is a stunt in the courtroom by having the prosecutor lay on the ground and, you know, show the position, that the wife was killed in. I think that is, that's purely a stunt. You could have done that in a very scientific way to explain it much better. So I wasn't too happy when they did that. They had the resources to do a proper scientific reconstruction, and they decided not to do that and to pull this little dog and pony show on the floor of the courtroom. You know, and just real quick, it never works, by the way. I worked on a case a long time ago with this lawyer by the name of Jeffrey Feiger out of Michigan.
Yeah.
A very flamboyant lawyer, and it was a medical malpractice case where the baby died because it wasn't delivered soon enough. So what he does, he gets on the floor of the courtroom as if he's the mother trying to give birth to this baby.
Yeah.
And, he ended up getting a $50 million jury verdict that was overturned on appeal. So I think that the prosecution has to be careful in pulling any more stunts like that, because it could be considered overly impassioning sympathy to the victims by the by an appellate court. So they got to be careful not to pull too many stunts and just stick.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Whew, kind of an intense conversation there. Scott, thank you for joining us. Scott Roeder of Evidence Room, LLC. If you like the show, press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of our breaking updates, conversations, and the stories that we are following for you right here. Do greatly appreciate that. You can follow me on Twitter at Tony B Pod. Get an ad-free experience of this program and all of our programs if you subscribe through Apple Podcasts. The opportunity is there for you right now. Even try it for 3 days free. We do appreciate that. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.